coming up on New York Now.
The bill is passed.
Two long, languishing pieces of legislation pass in Albany. The DREAM Act.
And I believe in a New York where I have a sense of responsibility to make sure that every other generation of dreamers has that same chance.
And the Reproductive Health Act.
We can't pretend that the case now and what can happen with women's choice and Roe v. Wade is not in jeopardy.
New York Now is next, right here on PBS.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation. Winner of a New York State Emmy for Best Political Program, this is New York Now.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to New York Now. I'm Matt Ryan.
And I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union. Legislation held up for more than a decade in the state Senate sees passage in the same week.
A big week for Democrats, as we see in this week's headlines.
Supporters and detractors descended upon the Capitol on the 46th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, where Democrats were poised to pass the Reproductive Health Act. For years, the proposed bill never made it to the floor under Republican control. But when that changed after the 2018 elections, its passage became an almost certainty now that Democrats hold a firm majority. The bill treats abortion as health care and not a criminal act, and will allow abortions after 24 weeks in cases where the fetus is not viable or a woman's life or health would be threatened by continuing the pregnancy. Several Republicans during the floor debate spoke out against the bill, including Daphne Jordan from the Capital Region.
The breadth of this is just too broad. The lack of a definition of a patient's health makes abortion a free-for-all. It enables anyone to claim mental distress as part of their health concern. We're a feel-good, throwaway society. If something interferes with your mental health, forget it. Get rid of it. If you don't like it, throw it away. If it's inconvenient, toss it. If it's too expensive to maintain, get rid of it. Doesn't fit your lifestyle, throw it away. A baby inside its mother is not an inanimate object. It's a life. It has a heartbeat. It can hiccup. It can kick. It can hear its mother's voice and music. It can feel pain. The next time you throw something away or hear a baby cry in pain, think of what you're allowing to be tossed away with a yes vote.
We can't pretend that the case now and what can happen with women's choice and Roe v. Wade is not in jeopardy. Clearly, our president has stated, and you know, my colleagues have said, that he has made it clear that some days he thinks women should be punished for their reproductive choices. Maybe they should go to jail, we'll have to see. But what is very clear is that there is no appetite for allowing women who have the right to their own destiny to be able to keep those decisions as their own personal decisions. And so today, we're saying no. We're saying not here in New York. We're saying that women's health matters. We're saying that her decisions about her life matters. And once again, we are leading the way.
Other legislation approved by the chamber included the Comprehensive Contraception Coverage Act, which requires health insurance companies to cover all FDA-approved contraceptive options, and the BOSS Bill, which ensures employees or their dependents are able to make their own reproductive health care decisions without incurring any adverse employment consequences. In what now has become rare, the governor held a Red Room press conference that night where he signed the RHA bill into law.
I believe in a New York that allowed my father to have the opportunities to give me the opportunities that I had. And I believe in a New York where I have a sense of responsibility to make sure that every other generation of dreamers has that same chance, has that same opportunity.
The other big news of the week was the passage of the DREAM Act, which will now allow college aid for children of undocumented immigrants. This is the ninth time that the bill has been put forth by the Assembly, and as Speaker Carl Hastie noted, the final time. The bill also passed the Senate on Wednesday. Hastie held a celebratory press conference with supporters.
Anyone who is here, by whatever means they came here, we want to make sure that they have the ability to live the American dream of getting an education.
The bill is named after the late Senator Jose Peralta from Queens, a longtime champion of the legislation. He died unexpectedly in November. His wife and two sons were on hand Wednesday.
I can think of no greater honor to his legacy than the work you're doing right now to pass the bill bearing his name. Today, my husband's dream becomes our reality. To every young immigrant hearing my words, we love you, we see you, and we welcome you into our American family.
The legislature also approved a measure ending a mandate that coupled teacher evaluations with results of students' standardized tests. This issue has been an ongoing battle for the better part of a decade now between unions and, notably, Andrew Cuomo. And the Senate passed a bill that would make the state's property tax cap permanent, something that the governor would like to see happen. The Assembly has not yet taken up this legislation.
All right, and now for some analysis of the week's action. We're happy to be joined at the Reporters Roundtable by Karen DeWitt of New York State Public Radio. Karen, another exceedingly busy week, and it looks like the hits are going to keep on coming in the weeks ahead. Let's talk a little bit about these three major pieces of legislation that passed in both the Assembly and the Senate this week: the DREAM Act, the Reproductive Health Act, and the decoupling of test scores from teacher evaluations. If you toted up the total number of years that these measures have been examined in both houses, I think it would add up to older than some of the lawmakers who voted this week on them.
I was going to say, probably older than me, even.
Yeah,
it was really a breakneck pace, and it's kind of dizzying that these things just keep happening. In fact, I was thinking back this week about the Reproductive Health Act, and I thought, oh, that was last week. Oh, no, that was Tuesday. So we're really not used to it. It's really different. But part of the reason, as you said, these bills have been around for years. So they were teed up, ready to go. They'd already discussed all the details, at least among the Democrats. Now that the Democrats are in power, they're like, you know, we've written these bills, we've vetted them, let's just go with them. So this is a lot of kind of low-hanging fruit, these measures that have been around for a long time, and they're just taking them one by one by one each day that they're in session.
And one of the senators said just that, didn't he?
Right. Mike Gennaris, the deputy Democratic leader, in response to Republican concerns that, oh, we're going too fast and, oh, this, you know, the people don't have time to read these bills, said, hey, come on, let's be straight about this. Let's watch a few seconds of that.
I've heard a number of my colleagues talk about how we're moving too quickly, and we've passed a lot of things in the last three legislative days. Well, they better get used to it, because we are just getting started, and there are going to be a lot of things that are going to pass in this House that have been held up for way too long. And by the way, it's not as if these bills have not had their day in the sun for public discussion. RHA was introduced over a decade ago. GENDA was first introduced in 2003. Some of the election reform bills we passed this week, I introduced when I was in the Assembly. So let's be clear. These are things that people want. These are things that people have been demanding. And these are things that have been held up for way too long.
Okay, so these votes were on the Reproductive Health Act were and the DREAM Act. These were pretty much party line votes, but not on the decoupling of test scores from teacher evaluations.
Well, that's right. And the Republicans, the teachers union, wanted the Republicans to put that bill on the floor earlier in the year. They didn't, and then the teachers unions worked against them for re-election. So I think that maybe that's why they felt like they needed to vote for this bill.
The final vote was 60-0. I mean, in today's day and age, when the Wood Frog legislation for the state amphibian was put up, there were five no votes.
Right.
So, it's really something. And it's
not necessarily from Wood Frog enemies, but from people who think those bills are silly.
That's right.
Yes.
But, yeah, a big win for the teachers union.
Yeah, well, there was another bipartisan bill that the Senate did, and that was making the property tax cap permanent, and that was 59 to one was not acted on in the Assembly. The Senate needed to do it because they have a lot of Democrats newly elected from Long Island. Mm-hmm. Property taxes are a big issue. They don't want Republicans to have an issue against them in 2020.
Right.
They don't want to be tied as these tax and spend liberals.
They took that right off the table right away. And that was mm-hmm. one of the first questions that Andrea Stewart Cousins got when she became the majority leader in November. And she said they were going to do it, and they did it. And it was headed by, you know, some of those Long Island senators where it's most important. You know, the Long Island property taxes are sky high, the highest, some of the highest in the nation. So it was important for them to get that done.
Yeah, they sponsored it. Mm-hmm. So their names are on there. So they got that right out of the way. And that's smart because the Democrats in the past haven't taken care of the so-called mm-hmm. marginals and these, you know,
they
precarious
did it right away.
Seats. So they're really mindful of that. And plus, Andrea Stewart Cousins is from Westchester, the district that she represents, so I think that she knows that, you know, this is a big issue, and if they don't look like they're doing something about the property taxes, they're not going to keep this nice, big, fat majority they have right now.
What are the prospects for that bill passing the Assembly, where the influence of teachers' unions is stronger? Not that it's weak in the Senate, but
you know, my guess is it's going to happen as part of the budget. And then the Assembly Democrats don't have to take as much responsibility. They can say, hey, Governor Cuomo put it in the budget, which he has, and we had to pass it. So I think that things that they don't really want to do, they're letting the governor do in the budget, but things they want to take credit for, like the RHA, the DREAM Act, the stuff coming up next week, they're going ahead, jumping out ahead of Governor Cuomo, who had all these bills that were passed this week in his budget, but the legislature is getting way ahead of him this year.
Next week, the action is going to include votes on the Child Victims
yeah.
Act, which extends the statute of limitations for sexual abuse complaints by people who were abused in childhood or in youth, and gun measures, including the banning of bump stocks and a so-called red flag bill.
That's right. And the Child Victims Act, that's a pretty significant development, was that the Catholic Church finally dropped its opposition late Thursday night. They've been opposing it for years.
With a caveat, though.
Yeah, that public schools be covered. And they are changing the legislation to make clear that there's no doubt that public schools, public hospitals are also going to be covered, that people who think they've been victims of sexual abuse can sue the public institutions as well. So the Catholic Church didn't really have any choice but to drop it. So that was a significant step. I think they were going to do it anyway, but that makes it a little bit easier for it to go through.
Yeah, and to get it done in January,
it's
really, I don't want to beat a dead horse, but these are issues that have been around forever. Sometimes as reporters, you kind of get lulled into the same patterns in January, you know, after the State of the State. You're basically just kind of waiting for the budget to pass, but there's been so much legislation passed in these past couple of weeks. It's totally different for reporters, for sure.
Right. I mean, reporters in January are used to the pomp and circumstance of the opening of the legislature, the governor's State of the State speech. Maybe you manage to maintain some excitement for the budget presentation. But in the chamber, it's usually resolutions honoring high school basketball teams, that type of thing.
I was very used to going in Monday mornings being kind of excited about work, and about noontime say, oh, yeah, they're not going to do anything, are they?
Not until March.
And also doing it in the daylight, all these bills. It's been very interesting to watch the debate, for me to be able to report on the debate in time for what's called afternoon drive time, when all the radio listeners are listening, instead of it happening at midnight, 1 a.m., where you have to do a very truncated story because, frankly, you haven't slept in a day. And I think that that's very different. You know, other state legislatures operate this way. They actually do bills during the day. So it's really something to see all this stuff, you know, really out in the open.
The governor signed the Reproductive Health Act the night it passed, right after it passed the Assembly. Company with the attorney who argued Roe v. Wade before the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, that's what I was going to say. He really wanted to do it that day because that was a significant day, the anniversary of Roe v. Wade. Mm-hmm. I think the 46th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, which makes it kind of unbelievable that, you know, we're still talking about the abortion rights issue, that it's still very controversial.
In a very poignant moment the following day when the DREAM Act was passed, the DREAM Act was named after the late Senator Jose Peralta from Queens, former assemblyman, then became a senator, Democratic senator. Then he switched over to the IDC. He got primaried and lost. Mm-hmm. He ended up dying unexpectedly in November. And you actually saw Speaker Carl Hastie tear up at the press conference on Wednesday. He knew him well. He served with him in the Assembly. Peralta's wife and two sons were there, along with other members of his family.
A lot
it was
of people
very
up.
Poignant.
I was sitting next to his mother. It really was. he just was so sincere and dedicated to that cause. I mean, I have pictures of him in a radio interview I did where he was wearing the little Dream Act T-shirt, and he was just a very sincere fellow. It seems, in retrospect, he probably made a mistake going with the IDC because he got primaried out, but then, you know,
that's politics.
Even worse things happened to him, and I know people generally felt bad that a very nice person died way too young.
Speaking of credit where credit is due, Governor Cuomo held a press conference on Thursday to sign a slate of electoral reform bills and a measure that finally closed the LLC loophole. I never thought I'd actually say that.
That's right.
A special guest of honor.
What are you going to do with your time now, Casey, that you can't talk about the LLC loophole?
Kick back my ties. But a special guest of honor, for some reason, was Ben Stiller, very talented actor and director, who most recently directed and produced Escape at Dannemora, where the governor was a character played by Michael Imperioli. A lot of people wondered why that press conference didn't include perhaps some of the advocates who had pushed for many of these ethical reform measures. I'll name a couple of them.
Sure.
Blair Horner of NYPIRG, Barb Bartoletti, recently retired from the State League of Women Voters, Dick Dady, Susan Lerner.
These people were not there to come in for the big win. Well, the governor's been kind of on the outs with them when the scandals were hitting and his former aide, Joe Prococo, you know, got convicted, went to jail, and all that stuff was happening, and the reformers were clamoring for reform. I think he may be just, you know, not feeling, I'm not going to say hold a grudge, but maybe not feeling really good about them. And plus, getting Ben Stiller there, I think he wanted to get the media there. I mean, these measures passed a week and a half ago, so it was essentially old news.
It was strange. The governor was sitting there, and it looked like he had a plaque next to him. And so I expected him to, this is the reason why Ben Stiller is at this press conference to give. We never got that, though. It was very strange.
Yeah. Ben Stiller, much to his credit, kind of pointedly thanked the governor for the tax credits that were that benefited the production of Escape from Dannemora.
But we watched, and we're talking about it now. So I think that the mission accomplished
True
for the
enough.
Governor, right?
Got us once again.
Yes.
All right. Well, Karen, you are not done talking about the Reproductive Health Act on this program this week.
No, I don't think I will be in my lifetime. I talked to Robin Chappell Gulston. She's with the lobbying arm of Planned Parenthoods for New York State, and we talked about the significance of the measure. You know, she went through some of the details of what opponents think about it and, you know, what's next. Robin Chappell Gulston, thanks for joining us here on New York Now.
Thank you.
So it was a big win for you this week. Wondering what were some of the thoughts you had as you witnessed the vote?
Sure, it was definitely historic. We were very excited. I mean, advocates have been working on this for over a decade. So this is a huge, long-time win that a lot of people have been working very hard on. So it was very exciting.
And how does it change things in New York regarding abortion rights?
You know, I think more than anything else, it protects us, especially with the threats on the federal level, that it makes sure that all New Yorkers have access to all reproductive health options. And so that really gives us kind of a backstop in terms of whatever the Supreme Court decides to do or whatever the Trump administration decides to do.
Well, I was wondering about that. Is New York really protected under these laws? Because what if the Supreme Court does overturn Roe v. Wade at some point? Wouldn't it only be a matter of time before somebody took New York's laws to court and then it would maybe go back to the Supreme Court? I mean, that's got to be a worry.
Right. I mean, that's always a possibility. But I think, if anything, people are anticipating that it really will fall back onto the states and they're going to more likely chip away at it. And so the blue states and the states that are protecting rights are going to be even more important because they're going to be the only options that women have.
So this is far from over for you. Your job isn't done today, right?
Can't wrap it up.
Yeah.
The fight continues. I mean, obviously on the federal level, there's continuous threats that continue to come down from Title X to restricting rights and access to even simple contraception and birth control pills. I mean, they've made everything now controversial. So it's going to continue.
Well, I should ask you about that because there was another big bill that was done along with the RHA, and that's the Comprehensive Contraceptive Care Act.
Yes, not the easiest name.
Kind of a big mouthful of a name. But it offers coverage even if the Affordable Care Act is chipped away at, correct?
Exactly. So this is another kind of backstop. Regardless of what happens on the federal level, at least New Yorkers will get no cost sharing and be able to access contraception affordably.
There were opponents of this measure, the Catholic Church, some Republican lawmakers. They had a number of problems with the bill, but their biggest objection is they said that this is going to increase late-term abortions in New York State. Is that true?
I don't believe that's true. Unfortunately, a lot of people actually have to go out of state. Some people do need to have abortions late in pregnancy. It's usually very unfortunate situations. And so now at least they can receive the care that they need within the state.
The other objection was health of the mother. Mm-hmm. The abortion would, late-term abortion would be performed if the health of the mother is in danger. And some of the Right to Life people say, well, that could mean that a woman at 6 months pregnant says, I just don't feel like having a baby anymore.
You know, I think this comes down to trusting women and also trusting providers. I mean, providers have ethics. They have, you know, standards that they go by. And in terms of just kind of thinking that this would be a willy-nilly decision, I think is really disrespectful to women.
Well, on the other side of the political spectrum, some say this is a medical procedure. So why should there be any restrictions on late-term abortions? You know, what is your answer to that?
I think in a best-case scenario, it really should be a decision between a woman and her provider. So, I mean, I think we were very happy with how RHA came out. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, this fight continues, and we want to make sure that everyone has the access they need to the care.
Because there aren't similar restrictions on any medical procedures that I could think of for men, right?
Right, exactly.
So do you think that would be a possibility in New York State that they might go further? I know there's been talk of a constitutional amendment. Governor Cuomo says he would like to do that. Would you support not having any restrictions, just making it a right?
Sure, of course. I mean, you know, from Planned Parenthood's perspective, we believe that this is a medical procedure and this is a medical decision that should be made by the doctor and the woman. And so I think we'll see how things kind of play out. And also it depends on what the Supreme Court does. It depends on what happens on the federal level in terms of really what the next steps will be. But we do definitely support a constitutional amendment.
Now, obviously, your job is a challenge, but you've said before that it's even more of a challenge being an African-American woman working for reproductive rights. Why is that? What are the special challenges?
Look, I think there's been a long history and a disconnect, unfortunately, within the women's movement and reproductive justice, which is kind of more of the focused on people of color. But I think, you know, I think we're making inroads. I think we're making connections, and I think collaborating, we all believe in the same thing. So the more we can work together, the better. But I think there's a history in terms of even past leaders, you know, being accused of being racist. I mean, that's something that, you know, everyone, I think, across the board historically have had to deal with.
Well, yeah, some opponents have said it's black genocide.
Right.
Yeah, so that's something that you have to deal with.
Oh, and I think, you know, look, I think, you know, there's a lot of talking points on the other side. I think that's ridiculous. I think women of color should have the same rights to reproductive health and access that anyone else does. This is not particular towards one type of woman or another. And I think it's not helpful in terms of really empowering women across the board.
But personally, has that been any issue for you, you know, growing up or anything like that, that you've heard those arguments?
No, I'm proud to, you know, stand by what we stand for. And I think, you know, empowering women of color especially is very important and very dear to my heart. And so the more access and the more ability people have to control their own destinies, the better.
So you haven't only advocated for Planned Parenthood your whole life. Sorry. I was looking at your resume and you started out working for Senator Chuck Schumer, which is really considered a great training ground in New York State politics. if you worked for him. You also worked for Hillary Clinton and Kirsten Gillibrand when they were U.S. senators. I'm wondering, do you think that we're any closer to having a woman president? What are the special, you know, obstacles that women face? We saw that play out in Hillary Clinton's campaign, certainly.
Definitely. I mean, I think there's, needless to say, still a double standard. I think there's a judgment on women being likable and being strong that we don't have to deal with male candidates. And I think there is progress, and I'm happy to see so many women candidates coming forward so early. And hopefully through what Hillary Clinton has had to survive, I think it hopefully will open the doors for more women to not have to deal with that and so much scrutiny.
Yeah, we have Elizabeth Warren, Kamala Harris, to just name a couple.
No,
of them.
It's
is there any that you are supporting?
Hey, I'm not picking yet, but I'm really excited to see so many great women, and they're all greatly qualified, and I think they have a lot to answer, you know, to give into the campaigns and to really help with the dialogue. That it's really exciting, and to see so many women running is huge.
Okay, well, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
All right, time now for this week's New York Now poll question. You heard earlier in the show about the DREAM Act passing. We want to know if you support it. Let us know at nynow.org. Last week, we asked if you would consider voting Kirsten Gillibrand for president. She made her announcement last week.
and over two-thirds of our voters said no. Sarah in New York City, watching on WNET, she goes with the tide of what she thinks is public opinion rather than on principle. Richard in Troy, not far from where the senator lives, said, "What an uplifting contrast to hear a voice for women's rights, renewables, and going all out to fight climate change. Hooray for our hometown hero speaking truth to power." Joanne in Smithtown, watching on WLIW, said, "As a lifelong Democrat, I find her untrustworthy. She goes with whatever she feels will benefit her." And finally, Kelly in Manhattan told us, "Gillibrand almost single-handedly retired Al Franken from the U.S. Senate without due process. I'll never forgive her for that. She's just another political opportunist." We appreciate everyone who took the time to vote. To do so again, just head to nynow.org. It's where you can find all of our past programs, plus links to us on social media, including Twitter, where our handle is @nynow_PBS. You'll also find a direct link to the Capitol Confidential blog, also at timesunion.com.
Well, we say goodbye today with more video from a busy week at the Capitol. I'm Casey Seiler from the Times Union.
And I'm Matt Ryan. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you next time right here on your local PBS station.
Funding for New York Now is provided by WNET. Additional funding provided by the Leo Cox Beach Philanthropic Foundation.